everybody. This is Tracy, and I'm delighted you've joined me for this episode of Good Life Stories. I created this podcast because I believe we are all seeking connection, and what better way to do that than through story? So get ready. These stories are meant to suck you in. Welcome to Good Life Stories. Hey, everybody, this is Tracy Crowley, your host of Good Life Stories. And today I had the privilege of talking to Patrick Almond. He runs a company called Stop Doing Nothing, which I've been a huge fan of for a long time. And he also has a really fun life story to hear today. So to his first segment, we're going to talk about is where he's talking about how done is better than perfect.
Hey, everybody. This is Tracy. Welcome to Good Life Stories. Today, I have Patrick Almond with me. I met Patrick almost a decade ago now, which is kind of wild, maybe 8 years ago through a friend. And I've been following his business and following his Stop Doing Nothing mission for a while. I even have his bumper sticker of Stop Doing Nothing on my truck. I've been so inspired by what you've been doing, Patrick. So thank you for joining me today. And I know you've got some fun life stories to share with us, as well as just some great wisdom. So
thanks, Tracy. I appreciate it. We can talk for 5 minutes or 5 hours about life. I've got plenty of life stories on there. And if they can help your listeners out, I'll gladly talk about any topic you want to talk about.
Exactly. You know, and so we were talking, getting ready for this, about your time in the military. Well, you know, is there, whether it's a story specifically from that or even a larger general one, I'm game. So just when I ask you that, what comes up?
Got it. Well, full confession, when I joined the military, so just so everyone knows out of context, I was born and raised in Southern California, did a little bit of traveling, but that's where I graduated high school. And so after high school, I really didn't, my family wasn't one that had like a lot of prospects. So my prospects were military. Yeah. And for those of you that had military experience, you know, you go down to the, there's like an enlistment building where like all the forces are, and you like do an interview. You have to take your ASVABs, then you do an interview with each one. And the military branch that wanted me the most, I think was Navy, because I scored really high and they wanted to put me on nuclear submarines. And I was like, first of all, I'm 6'2". I've been 6'2" for a long time. And I hear tall people don't do really great on submarines. So that one was out, not to mention just the idea of canisters in the ocean. We didn't want that one. At the time, the Army and Navy seemed like it was going to be too much work also. I was always a computer geek, so I ended up enlisting in the Air Force. Did that for probably 4 years, exactly 4 years. Like when my 4 years was up, I was out. But I learned a lot. I mean, that was... you know, for lack of a better phrase, that's probably what turned me from a boy into a man really quick, is once you join the military and you go through basic training, they find everything wrong with you as an adult and they get it fixed up. Like, I remember the TI, like, looking at my face and, like, picking out hairs. I hadn't started shaving yet. And they're, like, picking out hairs in my face. They're like, you need to start shaving, young man. So that was an interesting start to a career, but that was really good for me. I ended up 4 years in Omaha, Nebraska. Learned a ton about what I wanted to be in life. Because at the time, I didn't know. That would have been 86 to 90. At the time, I didn't know what I wanted to be in life. So the military did a really good job about teaching me about technology, which has served me well today, taught me about personal relationships, taught me about the importance, you know, of being on time for things. To this day, I make sure, like, my gig line, which is like how your shirt lines up with your belt, how it lines up with your zipper. Like, to this day, when I get dressed, I make sure my military gig line is correct. Yeah. But that was a really good experience. And that may have been also the thing in life that converted me to short hair. Before that, I was very much an Afro guy in the 80s. And ever since then, I've kept my hair pretty short. But the military was really great. Spent all 4 years in Omaha, Nebraska. Did not go overseas like I really wanted to. Didn't learn a lot about airplanes, humorously, considering I was in the Air Force with a lot of airplanes. I was in the underground headquarters in Omaha, and off the Air Force Base, Omaha, Nebraska, where I spent most of my 4 years. Didn't learn anything about airplanes until I got out. But that was a great 4 years. That's where I met my wife. That's by the time we had our daughter. And after the Air Force, a headhunter found me a job down here in Oklahoma City.
Nice. So you've been in Oklahoma City since then?
Yeah, since that would have been the end of 1990, about the time my daughter was born. And then I came down here first, and my wife and daughter joined me later. So I've been down here. I can always go by my daughter's age. So it's 2023. My daughter will be 23 in November. So we've been here 33, yeah. Right? Yeah. 33. So we will have been here 33 years. Wow. My daughter was born in November of 1990, and then we're down here within probably a couple of months of that.
Nice. Okay, that's awesome. So this is kind of a fun segue because you and I were talking about being a pilot. And I think it's funny that you just finished in the Air Force. You didn't get to know much about planes. Right. When did you decide that you wanted to learn to fly?
I decided, so I'm going to jump right in my life, people. So sorry, hopefully you keep track of the timeline. I decided I wanted to fly when I was a kid at some point in time. So that's the existential or the high level answer, no pun intended, right, when it comes to airplane. That's what I knew I wanted to fly. Having the money to fly is a different story.
Totally.
I like telling people, you know, flying airplanes is probably more expensive than cocaine or crack. It really is. It would be better if I was addicted to some drug than because paying for an airplane. So, but to answer the question I think you're asking is, well, when I started my business in 1990, I think I started my business in November, October of 1990. Yeah. Wrapping around the beginning of the year, I realized I was actually making decent money. And that's when I took my first flying lesson. So probably in my logbook, my very first log entry is probably in February or March of 1991 is when it was. And it took me a couple of years to get my pilot's license because I was traveling on business a lot. Yeah. But yeah, that's one of the most proud things I've ever done in my life is my pilot's license. And I keep it right behind my driver's license in my wallet, because it's just something I always wanted as a kid. And it always feels good to knock out something when you've been dreaming about it, you know, as a kid, going through elementary school, going through high school. I one of the big goals in life, I was glad I knocked out.
Because when I look at that, I mean, so many people have something like that, and they really do never get the resources or the time to do it. You know, it's something that you keep finding a way. You know, and that's one of the things, like, even for you, like, talking about, you know, starting in 1991, you know, and I think one of the things that you and I were talking about was flying during the pandemic. Like, that was the thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I think that so many people felt so isolated. Was, like, did you lean into flying, like, during the pandemic to feel like you had more space? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good way of putting it. In the aviation community, with flying instructors and pilots and whatnot, we respect each other enough to know that if we were sick with the pandemic, that we didn't get around each other. Because for those of you who've never been in a small airplane, here I am, we're on video. You guys can't see us. We're on video and talking. But inside of a small airplane, like, Tracy and I would be like elbow to elbow. Like, there's no space in a small airplane at all. If you don't like that person, you're gonna really not get along with them in a small airplane, because you're just, I'm a big guy and I'm touching people. So you have no choice but to be in close proximity to people. And I'm sorry, I have yet to see a pilot who tries to wear like that headset with a mask on. It just doesn't work. So I worked with a couple of flight instructors during the pandemic, and there was the respect that, you know, if you're sick, you don't go flying, period. Yep. But the times I did go flying, it was awesome during the pandemic. I didn't get a ton done. But mainly for financial reasons. But yeah, it just, you're right. The way you described flying and the freedom is really how I see it. You know, if we got off of this recording right now and I went down to the road, the local airport, and I was able to get up in an airplane, to me, it's so peaceful being in an airplane. Some people, it's stressful. Yeah. Some people, when they travel, it's stressful. But for example, I have to travel to Florida on business Friday. And I love going to the airport. I love going through security. And when I get in my seat, that's when I'm relaxed. Because at that point, the airplane's going to do the job. It's going to get me there or not. Preferably, yes, it's going to get me there. But but yeah, that's just the really relaxing part to me is flying. It's when I'm flying myself, I have to pay attention to a lot of what's going on, and I can't think about anything else. So if I stub my toe last night, if I had a bad day, if something isn't working out at work, or if I lost a client, I can't be thinking about that. I have to be thinking about keeping the propeller spinning, keeping my feet on the pedals, and making sure that all the dials stay in the green and not the red. And so I find that peaceful when I have to focus on one thing like that. So that's one of the many, many rewards I get from flying.
Yeah, I love that. You made me think of someone else I interviewed recently. Her name's Andrea Kohler, and she had taught me about a concept of where if you're doing an activity that activates three different parts of your brain, so the kinesthetic, so you using your hands to fly, the logical, where you have to like follow some rules, and then the creative, because I look at flying as an expressive thing. So it's a little bit like dancing. You have, you're controlling the movement. You can fly around literally. And that when you can activate all three parts of your brain, it actually turns off the to-do list in your head. You can't, your brain cannot track that. And so you end up having shower moments, you know, the stuff where you're doing something that you are unconsciously competent at. So you don't have to think about how to fly. Like, you have to pay attention, but you are, you know what you're doing enough to do it like driving a car, you know, it just requires a little bit more of you. And that's part of why that happens. I love hearing you describe it though. Like, I just can't, you can't hold that. And it's so, it's just a great kind of mental cleanse.
Yeah. I never even thought about that, but that's, you're right. It's a very good point. It engages. And especially the last one, when you're like, whoa, now what was the last one of the three?
So for it was the kinesthetic, logical, and creative.
Yeah, the creative part. I don't know how creative I can get in an airplane, but I do know the fact that I have a lot of control over my destiny. If I want to go north, I can go north. If I want to go down 1,000 feet, I can go down 1,000 feet. If I want to go up 5,000 feet, I have complete control of myself in the 3D space. And so sometimes I just do loop de loops for fun, or or if I see somebody on a boat on a lake, I'll just like do circles around him because he's taking pictures of me, I'm taking pictures of him, kind of thing. So I guess there's some creativity there. Yeah, you're right.
I think of it like dance. Like, I mean, dancers, but like if you think about more like partner dancing, where if you're doing it, you have to do things together, but you have a lot of flexibility within that. Like if you're dancing tango, there's a lot of things you can do in tango, but it still has to be tango. You're not throwing foxtrot in there. Like, it's, you're doing that. So I think of flying as expressive in that way. It's fun. You know,
give me a new perspective now. I have to remember that.
Yeah, I have a really different perspective on creativity, because I feel like there's so many professions like coding and stuff like that, that the people who do them don't really feel like they would ever describe themselves as creative. But for me, they're creating something I have no idea how to do. And so I find that so fascinating to think of what that expression actually looks like, even though it's numeric.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes from a good friend of mine who, when I was talking about, you know, that I didn't, at some point I was just sort of sharing with him, I just didn't really feel like I was good at math. Like, it wasn't something that ever really felt good to me. And he's like, your main two hobbies are photography and sewing. You realize all that is all math. It doesn't feel like math, but you know, it's measuring and cutting and F-stops and all that. So it's kind of fun to think
about. It's intrinsic. Yeah, it's intrinsic math. I didn't even think, a lot of stuff I guess we do, and I'm thinking about it, is math related. I don't do a lot of math in aviation, but without math, that plane would not fly. I guarantee you that.
Exactly. You're a beautiful blend of math and physics, you know?
Nice. Yeah. I got lucky on that one.
Yes. You know, and Patrick, I love what you do in your work, but I feel like a lot of people don't know what you do, you know, and in the sense of, I know that you do speaking and I follow your podcast and some other stuff, you know, but when we're talking about, like, if someone came to work with you, when you talk about clients, like, who are those people? What do you do for people? Because, like, I just want to know that.
So a couple of things, like everybody else, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. I would say since I started my business in 1998, I've been focused a lot on technically helping people. I was a coder there for a while. I really enjoy teaching people technology. And probably for the last 10 years, I've had a really strong focus on marketing. So right now, I would say probably the main thrust of the company revenue comes from businesses reaching out to me that need help with digital marketing. It really is. So I'm the guy that's good at the ads that you hate. That's what I like to say. You know, you hate Facebook ads? I'm that guy. You hate pop-ups on CNN.com? I'm that guy. I'm the guy that puts up all the annoying digital ads, and clients pay me good money for that. So as long as they'll pay me good money, I'll really do that. At the same time, I'm working to grow another side of my business, the Stop Doing Nothing side, the side that you're pretty familiar with, where I want to grow like a paid community of people and be able to have like a private place online where I can give what I like to call life execution advice. You hear a lot of stuff out there about like life coaching or life mentoring. I'm really big on the execution side of things. For those of you, again, we're doing this on video, but you guys can't see it. I'm wearing my happy stop doing nothing shirt. Tracy has a stop doing nothing sticker on your truck. Is that right?
Yeah.
I've got bracelets. It's just a constant reminder of how important it is to get things done, even when we don't know what we're doing. And that would be, probably a big philosophy that would come out of my life on my deathbed is the fact that I've done so much in my life without knowing what I was doing, whether it's electrical work or woodwork or starting a business. I had no experience starting a business. And so my big philosophy with stop doing nothing is, the fact that done is better than perfect, that if you make constant forward progress, whether it's starting a podcast like you did, Tracy, or anything else, we get so much further in life by willing to experiment a little bit and go out there and do something, even if we don't know how to do it at all. A lot of people that would start a podcast like you did or who would want to start a business like I did would wait until they had all these lessons and all this training and wait, 5-10 years until they thought they were perfect, and then they would start something. But you would be behind the people who just threw their hands up and said, I have no idea I'm going to start a podcast. I'm just going to press record and start talking. And who knows what's going to happen. And I'll screw it up and I'll make lots of mistakes. But, you're making mistakes and you're falling forward. So that's the real philosophy I want to teach people is the importance of making mistakes and falling forward, and in life and in general. So that's where I think I see myself going. And that really satisfies my teaching side also, is I really love to teach, whether it's technology, whether it's life skills, whether it's teaching a kid how to ride a bike. I just love being around schools and teaching. And so I'm trying to make sure my life is more centered on teaching than it's ever been before.
Yeah. And I think that, the thing that resonates with me, is that I love it. Cause like you guys can't see, but behind Patrick, he has a thing where it says done and then the greater than math symbol. Perfect.
I forgot about that. There it is. Yep.
Yeah. And, I feel like I talk to so many people who worry about getting it right. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about, that perfectionist mentality that I have to know what I'm doing before I start. And, I just so respect you for really showing examples and giving examples of how, like, here's all the things I've tried. Here's what I'm doing. And your messaging on social media is always so positive. Like, you're positive, even, and consistent. And I feel like there are not enough voices out there like that, where you're really just being encouraging and teaching. And like, I've learned so much listening to you, I love, for me, when I think about teaching stuff, if you were going to teach me something about marketing and what you do, like, where would you tell me to start? Where would you tell me outside of you calling you, is there a good place to start?
Probably the best place to start, I would say, a lot of people have a lot of problems in marketing coming up with something to sell and not telling enough people about it. So I know you're like, well, that's marketing, Patrick. Well, no, people are afraid to market when they have a product or a service. I've noticed that people, they're afraid to tell their friends about it. They're afraid to tell their family about it. They don't want to be seen as like being that annoying person that's always talking about their business. And my response to that is, number one, you're missing the opportunity for people who need your stuff to know about it. And you're also missing the opportunity for someone to refer you business. So for example, here's just a wild scenario out here. If I make sure that Tracy knows that I do marketing, and Tracy's up in, the Seattle Redmond area, and she runs into someone who needs like my kind of marketing, it has to be digital, has to be online, has to be lead generation related. By me talking about what I do online, Tracy knows what a good referral would and would not be for me. And so Tracy can be a source of business for me. But if I don't talk about what I do online, Tracy never knows. So I guess probably to answer your question, the short, concise answer is people just don't talk enough to their friends and family about what they do. And if they did more, they'd have a better source of referral business. And the referral business is one of the best kinds of business you can get, because if Tracy talks to somebody in Redmond and says, hey, my buddy and Patrick does digital marketing, when that person calls me, it's an easier sale for me, because by Tracy speaking up for me, she's already given validation that she knows, likes, and trusts me. And the trust goes from me to Tracy and then from Tracy to the referral. So that by the time the referral comes in, I've seen this time and time again, they're like, Patrick, Tracy referred you. I hear you're really good. Here's a blank check. How do we get started? Now, if I didn't get a good referral from Tracy, if it was somebody in a random elevator, I have to go through the whole sales process and pitching process and building up the trust. But the referral form of business just allows entrepreneurs to close business so much quicker. So if you have a business, please talk about it online, offline, at lunch, at breakfast, in the elevator. Make sure you mention it. You don't have to be pushy about it, but just make sure you're making people at least aware of what you do and then give them the chance to either say, that's nice, and push you out of the elevator, or that's nice. That's nice. Give me your phone number. I want to send you some business. So that would be the way is talk more about what you do, because you're missing people right in front of your face who want to give you money for your solution.
Yeah. You know, and I love the way you put that about the elevator, like that's nice, or shove you out of the elevator. And I feel like people are worried about getting shoved out of the elevator by their friends. And mm-hmm. what you're talking about, I feel like entrepreneurs, like you're saying, they don't want to be seen as salesy or talking about their business too much. And I feel like, most people, if you just think about your business as if you had a day job, mm-hmm. just talk about it as if you had a day job. Like, this is what I did today. Not, oh, do you need this? Hey, Patrick, buy my mm-hmm. stuff. It's, oh my gosh, I had so much fun today solving this digital marketing solution for this new client. If you can find ways to share that as a story with people, you don't have an issue with what you're talking about. Just taking that time to do that in that way makes it feel fascinating. Like, hey, cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about that. Tell me more. It doesn't become this weird, like, I don't need marketing, conversation. Right.
Or teaching, or I think another part of teaching a story, teaching is when you share that, you're also teaching people. So if I do share something on my social media, it's like, hey, I had to create a Facebook ad today and I had this challenge and I did this. Well, even if somebody doesn't want to buy my services, I could have taught somebody something. And teaching gets back to that trust we talked about. If you could teach someone, they're going to implicitly trust you. Yeah. And that's just the beautiful. That's one of the reasons I love just doing like classroom teaching. I love doing that too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. And I love, hearing that power and that encouragement for people, because, there's so many people who, have a side hustle now or have something new, and they don't want to be the network marketing person that you met 15 years ago. I don't want to be that person, because you don't want to, lose friendships, and you're not going to, cause I feel like for you, I now feel like I know more about what you do so that I can listen better. Like, that's all it does, is helps everyone, listen better for you.
Right. Right. I'm a big teacher. And like I said, that even carries over to like classroom stuff. Like, I volunteer at a school every Friday when school is in session, just because the idea of, like teaching young minds or being around, kindergartners through fifth graders, when our minds are getting molded, that's where I like to spend my time on Friday. So whenever Tracy and I were scheduling this, if it would have been during the school year to record this, I would have been like, Tracy, can't do Fridays. Yep. I spend the first half of my Friday in a school. And that's really important to me. So I typically don't move that.
Yeah. No, and that's a really fun way to look at that.
Thanks so much for listening to Good Life Stories. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit our website at goodlifestories.com for more show notes and additional episodes. Please subscribe and consider rating and reviewing the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts to help others connect to us. Who do you know with a good life story? I would love to hear from you. Good Life Stories, creating connection, one story at a time.